Welcome to We Empower, the radio show that inspires you to embrace your potential, resilience, and strength. In these challenging times, we're here to help you unlock your power to overcome obstacles, pursue your dreams, and shape a brighter future. I'm Anna Martinez, your host for this empowering hour. Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of We Empower. I'm thrilled to have you all with us today. So sit back, relax, and get ready to be inspired. Let's make today count. In today's episode, we will have two great guests here to introduce as Anna-Katrin Yvonne Abstus-Becker, connector of strong voices, resilience advocate, and community builder turning personal challenges into meaningful impact and inspiration, and then Mark Sefton. We're very happy to have him here, a storytelling strategist, best-selling author, mentor, and media host, helping global thought leaders find their voice, visibility, and impact. So let's kick things off with a song selected first by Mark.
I see the light. Does an angel contemplate my fate? Do they know the places where we go when we're gray and old? 'Cause I've been told that salvation lets their wings unfold. So when I'm lying in my bed, thoughts running through my head, and I feel that love is dead, I'm loving angels instead. And through it, oh, she offers me protection, a lot of love and affection. Where I'm right or wrong, down the waterfall, wherever it may take me, I know that life won't break me. When I come to call, she won't forsake me. I'm loving angels instead. Wow. When I feel weak and my pain walks down the one-way street, I look above and I know I'll always be blessed with love. As the feeling grows, she breathes flesh to my bones. But when love is dead,
Mark, welcome here in the show. I'm happy to have you.
I tell you what, it was so hard not to sing along to that.
Yes, same here. It's one of the songs I also love the most because it gives me always good inspiration. It gives me a good vibe, and it's good also for cloudy days.
It absolutely is. You know, it's a really good song. I think it always evokes real positive memories. It takes me down the thought process of the healthy feminine, embodying like the healthy masculine as a man, and then experiencing the healthy feminine. Yeah, it's a really beautiful song.
Yeah, same here. It's a great start to introduce also you. I mean, some interviewers ask questions, others unlock people. Today, we changed the seats, right? August today has conducted more than 5,000 interviews, coached entrepreneurs worldwide, authored best-selling personal development books, and earned the title King of Conversation. Wow. Through storytelling, visibility, and deep human connection, he helps leaders discover not just what they do, but who they truly are. So, kind of coaching, and of course, also a bit of a support for life, changing your life. Welcome, Mark Sefton.
Great to be here, Dr. Annabelle. Really looking forward to sharing this time with you.
Mark, I mean, introducing you that way, how does it start? What was the small Mark feeling? Your childhood, was there already this question monster asking everybody questions, and where maybe your parents said, "Oh, stop it, this is not good what you're doing, this is not appropriate," or how were this first step into the world, the first steps of Mark Sefton?
I'm a big believer that your gifting makes room for you. I think that I have to give kudos to my late grandfather, who he never it was never a relationship where he sat me down and taught me about entrepreneurship and the importance of a healthy reputation. It was very much me just watching him. I remember when I was 6 years old, he picked me up. He owned a number of businesses, and one of the businesses he owned was a fruit and veg market, which is obviously really popular, all those many years ago. And yeah, he'd pick me up and he'd pick me up in his van and we'd go and deliver fruits and vegetables to the local restaurant, pubs and hotels. And I got to see the rapport and the fact that he was solving a problem, which I think is the essence of any business. So I certainly had a good blueprint of what it really meant to be able to take care of the need of the marketplace. So I definitely bring a lot of focus, I think, to that. I also, as a child, when my parents divorced when I was about 8 years old, I comfort ate. And so unfortunately, I put on a lot of weight. And at school, I was bullied quite heavily for the way that I looked, both verbally and physically. So I think that I know what it feels like to not feel I've got a voice or to feel like I don't matter. And I think that's a part of the reason why I do what I do now, is that I like to give people a voice to be able to share their story. And I think between those two, and there's lots of other probably impacts that come along the road, but I think for the sake of trying to be concise and precise here, they're probably the two kind of factors that I feel have probably resulted in me doing what I do. But for me, psychologically, my greatest motivator is contribution.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing these stories with us. By telling the story of your grandfather, there came some great pictures to me, and I felt like being part of this, going with your grandfather to the hotels, seeing how he deals with them, how he feels maybe as a kind of service person, but on the other hand, entrepreneur, combining both with the attitude of, growing also his own personality from just a person who's serving to somebody who has to offer something, somebody who, as an entrepreneur, this is two different roles often for people, right? Because nowadays, people who are entrepreneurs don't feel that they should serve. And people serving don't feel as they could grow into an entrepreneur. But the best entrepreneur is the one who's serving, right? Because he understands the people the best, and of course also himself. Isn't it like this?
Yeah, I have to give a lot of kudos to hospitality, because I did actually go into like one of my first jobs was as a waiter, and then I went into restaurant management. But the one thing that I loved about that industry is I learned how to develop what I call the eyes, which is really understanding what somebody needs even before they understand what they need. You know, to be attentive, to be observant, to be in that place of service. You know, for me, that definitely helped. They have that ability to really pay attention to what they see and what they say, but few of them actually have the ability to be able to pay attention to what they don't hear and what they don't see.
Absolutely. Do you have also the feeling that people nowadays are more busy with themselves by talking and listening, by listening already producing an answer and not really listening to the people the people talking to them?
Absolutely. I think there's a difference between listening and hearing someone. And for me, it's really hearing what somebody's saying, and really being in them in this moment. I think one of the things that has helped me, which kind of came through at the time when I was married, I was having marriage counseling, and there was this concept of entering into each other's world. I realized, like back then, that I would only listen to people where I had a vested interest, where I was excited by the subject matter. And this idea of when somebody confides in you, that they're actually calling you to enter into their world, it kind of changed things for me. So then I thought, actually, that's beautiful. If they're telling me about this, they want me to enter into their world. And even if I don't have a relatable understanding or passion towards it, I absolutely love the idea of being welcomed in, and it completely changed my ability to listen and to hear.
I love this very much because it gives a completely other understanding of listening and of also taking a break from producing. Because I think most of us are producing the whole time about, okay, have I closed the window? Okay, is it appropriate for my clothes? Is it rainy in a moment? Do I have to walk a bit earlier? Is the person I'm currently listening to, is this a person attractive to me or does it make sense to listen? So there's so much happening instead of just listening, just giving it a space to really serve this person, to really adore this person, to really give yourself also the ability to to open yourself and give yourself the room to say, yes, I take time for you. In an AI-driven world, what becomes uniquely human about storytelling?
So obviously there's a big emphasis at the moment with AI. So I want to make sure that I understand your question, actually, Annabelle. So if you can, yeah, just re
Of
repeat
course,
that for me.
of course. We talked about storytelling, about people talking about themselves. We talked about that it's important to take a break, to really listen to this. In an AI-driven world, things got so quick, so digital, so that people are currently asking what is really real about themselves. What is really a part of the individuality, and or what is given by AI, by something from externally, because reading a text where the AI writes it better than themselves, a text they will say later on just on a stage to talk about something emotional. Is this the emotion of themselves? Is this the emotion of somebody else? Or even if, for example, AI is suggesting a storytelling, a story they should share. I remember, for example, and I can share this with you to just point out and stress what I really mean. A few, I think it's 1 year ago, I entered a festival and there was somebody jumping on stage and he started with, "I'm a vegan." And the people gave him applause, formal applause. Oh, great, you're vegan. Okay, so that was a first. And I thought, okay, this will be a journey. And the next was, he said, Okay, listen. I worked at first at a Disney World, and I was t one of the Tick Trick truck, and I had to wear a costume. And inside this costume, there was a was something which collected everything what I normally would like to bring to the toilet. At the end of the day, I had to empty this, and they all were, "Oh my God, poor guy! He had to stay the whole time in this way." So, and the third thing he said was super emotional. He said, "Listen, there was a woman. She died in her 90s, and she gave me a letter. And she said, if I die and I give you this letter, you should keep it secret for yourself. Never, never give it to somebody else." And he said, "And now I will read this letter to all of you." And then he started reading. And it was so emotional, this letter. And it was a kind of pray to himself, like, "Oh, I'm so glad you saved my life," and blah blah blah. So the people were really screaming. They gave tears, and they were so emotional touched. He said also that he comes from a family where they had no money to buy anything, and he had to go to the neighbors to ask for sugar and things. So later on, I talked to a woman a few days later and said, "Regina, I saw him on stage. Do you know him? Have you heard about him? He was really manipulative. He really moved masses." And she said, "Oh, Annabelle, yes, you used the right word, manipulative." She said, "Nothing of this, what you told me, was right. He writes letters like this on a frequent basis and use letters like this," where he always said the people told him to not show this letter to anybody else. And then he reads this, and the people died. He often has also ideas about this person had suffering of a really hard illness and gave him the letter. Then second, his father is the board of one of the most wealthy companies in Germany. So they own many real estates. He was raised and educated in the best schools. He was born in a villa, in a big villa with security. So she said, "None of these stories is right." But he made it with a machine. Somebody wrote this for him. So it was a completely storytelling of a kind of fairy tale, not telling the story from himself. So he built a fake identity. And of course, in an AI-driven world, this is easy to do. You can fake your identity. And not little people do this because they think if somebody from zero can get a star in a fake identity show, so why shouldn't I fake my identity also for that? So this is my question. So how can storytelling, or what becomes uniquely human about storytelling, and how can you identify also that a storytelling is human?
Yeah, I mean it's a great question. First of all, I'm not a vegan. You know, for me, stories are always they always are attached with energy and feeling, and the fact that you were able to decipher the fact that even though other people were being duped by it, there was something within you that knew that something was amiss. And I think that those abilities to understand energetically what is sincere and what is true, I think is a really big part of it. But I also think that people always show you who they are by the way they show up. Because we can all fake words and even actions, but there's something that says about patterns of behavior. And so for me, a story needs to be something that's also conveyed with someone who's able to then, live a life where they're really living in that story, and it's not kind of detached from them. It is difficult. I think it does take, your intuition and your need for being able to see, beyond that.
Absolutely. Intuition is a big word and a very important word. I would like to step into this word later on after the small commercial. We have now a small break of approximately 2 minutes. So stay tuned, and I have plenty of, I think, great questions I have to ask you.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So, Mark, after 5,000 interviews, what truth about human ambition surprises you most?
Well, that's a good question. What surprises me the most? You know, I think that the interesting thing with my journey of interviewing so many different people, I've interviewed people at the very top, the household names, and then I've interviewed people, you know, at grassroots level. And I always like to look for patterns. We all know that that thought process of success leaves clues. And I love to reflect and I love to kind of just observe, you know, people's behavior. And it's interesting that those at the top, they all have one common denominator, which is that they know when to get out of their own way. And I think so often, especially in business, we tend to look at our business as a baby because we're proud of it. We've created it. We've nurtured it. But the problem with a lot of businesses is that they tend to keep treating it like a baby, even when it's actually a teenager. They don't allow it to grow, to express itself, for it to breathe. And I think that's one of the things for me that kind of surprises me sometimes, where people are constantly having to poke it, constantly having to stroke it and feel like they have to change it all the time rather than allow it to breathe. And so I think the thing that fascinates me about human behavior is the fact that, especially in the business world, you've got two lots of contrasts. You've got some that are constantly making their business all about them. And then you've got those who know how to get out of the way and let that business breathe and express itself. And for me, I think that's the fascinating thing, because we all get to choose. Some of us, we make it all about us. And then for me, the ones that really succeed make it about everybody else. It's the same with radio. It's the same with podcasting. The most important people here isn't me or you. It's actually the person that's listening to it. You know, and I think that's one of the things when I was in radio, I really learned that actually the most valuable is the one who's consuming that which we are creating. And so for me, I think that's one of the things that really fascinates me about all those conversations that I've had with people.
I mean, somebody who's a storyteller, somebody who is a listener like you, gets so much impact, gets so much insights from the people. And I think it is great on one hand, but I think it could make somebody also to think about, to maybe also step into really stories which are not always nice. How do you keep yourself healthy over the day?
How do I keep myself healthy?
Yes.
You know, actually, I believe that the people that talk about the difficult stuff, the only reason they can talk about that difficult stuff is because they've had a level of healing where they've actually sat in their struggle, in their trauma, in their difficulty, and been able to come out the other end. You know, so for me, in terms of keeping myself healthy, there's kind of three things that I believe that we should all do to stay in our power, you know, and make sure that we come back to ourselves. The first one is to never compromise on your values. I think values are really one of the underpins to keep us healthy, both mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually. Really know what you value, and don't like betray that. The second thing is regulating your nervous system. So there's things that I do, like a cold shower or meditation or breathing. And one of my favorite things at the moment is listening to frequency 528 hertz, which is a really nice frequency in terms of deep healing. It helps you really tune into yourself. And then the third thing would be intuition. So for me, I never ignore that small voice in the pit of my stomach. Those three things, I think, for me, really help me stay healthy.
That's great. I love also that you said intuition because it's something which is absolutely underestimated from my point of view. It's also underestimated when we talk, of course, also about that some people become visible, some people remain unseen despite talent. Often when I see these people, the last party, then I feel that these are people where there is a head and there is a belly. And in the heart, and there's no combination between both. Where on the other side, people which become visible, they are walking with their heart and with their belly, and the brain in second place, which could tell them, hey, stop, you are not that visible, you are not that talented, you are not that VIP, you're not allowed. The others just do. Is this the secret of why do some people become visible while other remain unseen?
I really feel like it's quite simple in terms of my thought process, which is the fact until you see yourself, nobody else will see you. It always starts, Dr. Annabelle, with our relationship with ourself. It blows my mind that we are with ourselves 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and don't get me wrong, there's been times where I've wanted to jump out of my body and be like, I need a break from I need a break from you. But that's the truth of it. And I think that for me, the first step to visibility, to be seen, is actually all about how you see yourself. Everything comes from that. Validate self before you look for validation from someone else. Approve of self. That for me, it's in that quiet place. It's in working with yourself. It's in creating space. Coming back to yourself is a skill. It is an art form. It is something that we all need to be mindful of. If you ask yourself the question, when was the last time I came back to me? It's a really good question, especially over the weekend pending. Take time to just think, when was the last time I came back to myself? Because it's from that, really, when you're comfortable in your own skin, you know your own truth, you know the beat of your own drum. You know what excites you. You know the very fingerprint of your own DNA. I think when you embrace that and you work into that, that's really when I think people start to see you.
Wow, thank you so much. I have a plenty of questions left, Mark, and I would love to ask them, but unfortunately, we have to find another way to doing it. Maybe it's a second time I will invite you to the radio,
I'm
or
ready.
we have to meet in person in London, which would be also my pleasure, as this is always on my plate, and I would love to. So
Me too.
thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for sharing your loved wisdom with the listeners here. I'm very happy that we could have you here in the show.
Thank you.
So, this is a jump from Mark to Yvonne. So I would like to welcome now Yvonne here in the show. Yvonne is still, I think, on the run here to us. Yvonne, are you already with us?
Yes, I'm here. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Okay. But our listeners, okay, they don't they even don't see you, so they have to feed
Yeah.
you. This is
So I'm
the
a tech person, so I don't know why I didn't get this to work. So
you're a tech person, yes.
yes.
Maybe this is the faith.
Yeah. Seems so.
Welcome here on the show, Yvonne. Let me introduce you with a few further words. So some people build careers, other build courage in public. Today's guest represents resilience, reinvention, and the power of sharing authentic stories that inspire others to move forward, even through uncertainty. So From personal transformation to empowering conversation around strength, community, and new beginnings, I would like to welcome you, Yvonne Abstoß Becker.
Hi. Hello. Thank you.
Great to have you here. So,
Thanks.
Yvonne, we often start with a childhood, and with you, I would like to start. What personal challenge changed your definition of strength forever, maybe also since your childhood?
Yes, I grew up in Eastern Germany. So, and then when I was 19, so then I was in the middle of my of studying mathematics in Eastern Germany, and there was the wall came down. So, and yeah, then everything changed. So everything, whatever I learned was right, was wrong then. And vice versa. So, yeah. And it seemed like I had to kind of grow up again to find my way through all the new situations, and everything was quite a challenge. Yeah.
I can imagine. I can imagine because my father was a wanderer through these two worlds as a communist and fan of this regime in the theory, not in the practical. But so we were on a frequent base, also in both parts of the country. And for me as a kid, it felt normal that we could do this. Well, I had to learn later on that it was not normal. But I would like to go back. I mean, you were born in Eastern Germany, and
Yes.
just let me share a small experience. I had a small experience, job experience, working for the Senate in Berlin, and there were some women. They were straight, great posture. Straight, looking at me with a warm but strong, yes, I know who am I, and a strong, yes, I know that I'm responsible for myself. And each of these women were from Eastern Germany. And there were some other women from Western Germany that looked at me in a different way, a bit more jealous, a bit more, I don't know if I have to explain why I'm doing this job. I feel a little bit that I'm guilty for working here instead of being with my kid. I'm feeling a bit guilty that I'm not doing this and that, what I dreamt about. So it felt for me that I could re-identify women with an Eastern Germany background from women with a Western Germany background. Would you confirm that?
Yes, in Eastern Germany, it was like usual that a woman would work, and also that especially also in all the tech like mathematics or physics or as engineers or people like this, there were also women were the same could do the same jobs and everything as men could do. And also with the same, it was just like a usual thing, so nothing special or nothing you would, talk about or to explain why would you work having a family and everything like this, and then later on, when I started working in Western Germany, then I was at the client side and. There was one person from the client side. He asked me why I would be there when I had a little child at home. So it was this question he really asked to me, and I was like, I don't know why I have to explain this. So why would I stop working? I mean, I just of course she was in good hands, and everything was taken care of. So I didn't need to just stay at home all day. To have a happy kid. I think she was also happy being with her nanny. And she had a lot of new experience, new friends already when she was quite a small kid. And I thought it was good for her experiences and development.
Why couldn't this been taken over by the unifying of the East and West? It seems to me that it didn't.
Yes, I know. It's still in these days. I still find people who still believe, and I think it's getting stronger again also with younger women, that they think it's a good idea to stay at home and stop their career. And but I think if everything works as you planned and you stay married and everything stays fine, then it might be okay. But if anything happens, if you get divorced, or if if you just have to, if you're older then and need to see how you if you retire and then have to see how you can manage your life still, then I think it's much di more difficult if you were dependent on your husband and or any other person. Yeah, I mean, it's just the way it is.
And I mean, I was really shocked when I got also feedback from from the young generation, as you describe it, as it feels like falling back into old patterns. And where I thought, hey, for I mean, I was proud when I heard that my mother just got a job, and she jumped over this old restriction of that a contract has to be signed or approved by the husband, and that she just said, okay, having five kids, whatever. Okay, I want to take this job. I just want to really live my life. I found this really great, and hearing these stories nowadays shocks me a tiny little bit. On those. No, although I can imagine that, of course, with times of crisis, it might have something to do that old patterns comes back. But what can we do? What can we do in addition to just being role models?
I always, if I meet young people, then I always try to explain them that it's really important to not be dependent on other people, that you have your own standing and your own way, and just stay there with your opinion and everything. Also, if people start to, discuss and then try to explain you that it's that your kids will not. Be happy, and they cannot develop the right way and everything. So I don't think this is the case, really. I mean, it's nice to be if you can take time for your kids, of course, that's also important. But it's not a 24/7. You don't need to be around them 24/7, in my opinion.
I think so too, and I think it's super important that we understand that we all have a right on emotional resilience, that we all have a right on growing, and that we all have a right on needing some time for us to developing. Why do we still underestimate emotional resilience as a leadership skill?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure, really.
Is it maybe because of digitization?
Yeah, might be the case.
So we have time to talk further, and I have plenty of questions waiting for you. So we have a 2 minutes break now, and please stay tuned. We see each other back in approximately 2 minutes.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
BK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Ivan, we just talked about East and West and also about this idea of women from East, that it's super clear and absolutely normal to work and have kids, for example. How can women create influence without copying traditional power structures?
Yeah, I think it's quite important that if you're a parent or if you are a mother, to be a role model, as you said already earlier, and that kids have the possibility, or if they they're not kids anymore, then if you're grown up, they have the possibility to decide and to have the freedom to decide what they really want to do, and also to find their way of life they like, and also to really make sure that they are not depending on other people and other people's opinion. I mean, that you are strong enough to stay with your opinion also if the wind blows in your face and people want to convince you that you are wrong, it's really important to have get your children to become strong people.
What if difficult life transitions? And I think you described one with us when life just changed its color, and when the word just changed its apostrophes. So what have difficult life transitions taught you about identity?
When I was like 7, in the first grade at school, there were some kids who told me that I was a capitalist's daughter.
Oh,
so yes,
heavy.
So in Eastern Germany, yeah. And I was like, my father, he was born in 1920, and then after the Second World War, he founded his own company in Eastern Germany. And not knowing what the development would be then later, to that everything would be closed. And then in 1972, the state would take the company away from him. It was like in 1972, there was another wave of taking people's companies away. I was too small that too young that I would really understand what's going on there, and a lot of things changed already for our family at this time. But my parents decided to stay in Eastern Germany and not to, with my brother and me, not to leave the country or try to leave the country. I mean, the wall was already built and everything was closed, and that we tried to leave the country via Austria or via Hungary and then Austria and so, but it didn't work with the wrong passports and stuff like this. So, then I had to really face this story with people knowing that I was the capitalist daughter. And then, it took really a lot of time that I was, could cope with this, with the whole thing. And this was the first, thing in my life where I had to realize that, if you are not in the, if you not do the, what everybody else does, then people would really be mean at you. And but this already thing, I think, would make me stronger. the first time.
Thank you so much for sharing this with us. What do you think? What role does belonging play in personal transition? I mean, I see a lot of people trying hard and always pushing against a wall, trying to get something. But what role does belonging play in this?
I think it's I mean these changes which took place in my life, I couldn't do anything about it. You know, I couldn't say no, I don't want this. This just happened. And yeah, I mean, if you face something like this, then it's I think it's yeah, you need to find a way to be to be part of the changes, and then also to see how you would like to continue and how you would like to still stay with what it's important for you, and not to just switch to what everybody else would like to you to do.
You described in these few words already a lot. And I think we're in a time of transformation, so you got educated very well this
Yes,
huge
I'm
change.
prepared.
I mean, you shared also a little bit of the time where you were growing in your youth. What is there a story? Is there an experience you had, which is the story which made you the person you are, or which is the driver of that, what you currently do? Because you reached so much, you built so much in a field where you in Western Germany rarely see women.
When I finished my studies in Eastern Germany, I mean this was the war came down in between, but then I had to see what I would like to do after this time, and then I started working with an American company at Accenture. It was Anderson Consulting at that time still, and I think this was quite heavy school of learning everything about the new type of society, and also the companies and how everything works there. But then I was for half a year. I worked in Chicago, and there it was already still different. Woman as a woman there, it was again easier to work in tech. In a tech company, and also to say, okay, I would like to have some more responsibility, and I would like to take some more tasks and things like this. It was much easier to work there.
I can imagine. So, sorry, did I interrupt?
No, just okay.
Okay. So, I mean, we're here currently at a stage or at a sit in a situation where some people think it all falls back, or they don't know, and it's a really time of heavy insecurities and crises, and looking to the future, they are not happy about what they see, or they're not feeling safe what they see. Which social shift do you believe will redefine human connection in the next decade?
I think I'm not sure if we really will fall back to some older model of of being. This is not, I think this is at least I hope we will not go back to some other things, which I was happy that they disappeared, or that they started to disappear. But I think one problem is that people, they have a lot of fear the future, and I think it's important not to have fear, and not to, and I think also all the TV and social media, and they need to take more responsibility to make sure that they do not make this fear stronger. So I think they do a lot that they just tell all the bad news and everything is bad again. I mean, there is a lot of bad things in the world, but still, I mean, it's not, it doesn't help to have fear.
I'm absolutely with you. I think the killer of democracy is fear, and the killer also of self-development is fear as well. I mean, fear at least is not something bad, right? Because it's sometimes good to have this, for example, against a hungry tiger that you know
Yes, exactly.
that this animal doesn't come to be cuddled and.
Yes, yeah. But if it just somebody tells you there might be a tiger, then yeah, it's not good to have fear. So it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and it's also interesting. I mean, I have as a very small kid at 7 years old, and he could sit hours in front of challenges where people do something to overcome their fear, really challenges, just to be thrown in a car into the water, for example, or just laying in a cage and then overrun by hundreds of spiders, for example. But it's interesting as these shows are getting more and more, and people love to see that, and as if this fear, which we have from the old times of being in the Neanderthals, coming out and being more present in the nowadays time, right?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, I think it's yeah. I think it's important to not be afraid of the future and to, okay, you know, there will be some changes always because yeah, change is just life, but it's yeah, not to be afraid of the future.
How do you think that vulnerability become a strategic advantage? Because still, vulnerability is something most of the people like to avoid. Where a few used it for getting popular, but most of the people like to avoid it, being frightened that they lose their job or don't even get one. And I remember a scene which I would like to share with you. It is a few weeks ago, where there was an event at a bank, at one of the biggest bank organizations in Germany, and it was about diversity. And at one point, a woman standing at the stage, she said, "Oh, by the way, I'm handicapped. Here is my handicapped passport. Look." All the audience was really, really quiet. And she said, "I now want to speak it out loud. Nobody of us show this normally. Nobody of us will show how vulnerable we are, how handicapped we are, because this is a killer for every career. But I do it right now to be the first to do it and hopefully be followed of many."
Yeah.
And I found it really interesting because I thought, why is this happening in this time now? Why are we not far off seeing handicaps as a kind and working with a handicap as a kind of great that you are handicapped and do this job? Wow, this is more role model than
Yes,
something,
that's true.
right?
Yeah, that's true. It's also brave to. Yeah, to just be open with this. Yeah, but it should be a normal way of doing things and being also open to show if there's not everything needs to be perfect to be good. So.
Yeah, and maybe that gives us a bit of hope that authentic stories are currently becoming more available than polished branding.
Yes.
Looking also into TikTok or Instagram, where the hottest videos are not the ones which are really polished and where they even took away all wrinkles and so on, but the best are the ones which are just taken with a hand camera, where all feels real. Maybe because we are hungry for real, we are hungry for the real, real, just against that, where we are not sure if it's fake or not.
Yeah, that's true. I think the authentic and also real and especially not the perfect thing. Not people don't need to be perfect and don't need to look perfect and are still nice and even much nicer than the ones who are perfect.
What kind of future communities do you think people secretly long for? Because we lost communities, we lost connection by losing, for example, communities which were about religion, by seeing that leaders in the third churches were attacking other people, doing sexual incidents. So we lost a lot of these institutions which were believers into, yes, this is something where we can believe and that it's something which gives us safety and trust. What
Yes.
do you think? What kind of future communities do people really secretly long for?
Yeah, I think there are some, or there are several associations where people can join and then share same interests or to help each other, to support each other in different areas of the of different different areas, not just hobbies and stuff like this, but also, to help each other in in your life, everyday life. This is what I see, at least on the countryside.
So maybe it is the angels we need, which brings us back to Robbie Williams, to our start, where
Will
we.
be at the concert tonight in Düsseldorf.
No!
Yes.
Oh my God! Wow!
Yes.
This is not a circle economy, but this is a circle of life. Wow!
Yes.
Think about me and let me know next time because I would
Okay.
love to be part of this.
Yeah, I
Well,
will.
thank you so much, Yvonne, to really bring the circle together. And thank you so much for being part of my guest here today in the show. It's great to have you here. It's great to hear you. And please further stand up and be a role model for other women in the world.
Thank
And
you.
thank you. And I hope you have taken something away for yourself or has perhaps piqued your curiosity and interest to want to do something different or more. And so that wraps up our episode of We Empower, the weekly radio show dedicated to celebrating the strength, resilience, and limitless potential of women and men around the globe. Don't hesitate to get involved. Your voice is valued. Thank you for being part of our community. Until next time, keep shining and empowering others. Together, we rise. Thank you.